This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Help me welcome back to the program Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their most recent book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. Their new book, Crossing Zero, The AFPAC War and the Turning Point of American Empire, is due out, January or February?
February. Ready February, right.
Just a few weeks away, and we'll be looking forward to talking about that. We have a whole lot we want to talk about, and thank you both for coming back on the program. Let's start with the discoveries in the most recent WikiLeaks dump of diplomatic cables. What really jumped out at y'all about Afghanistan and Pakistan from these releases?
Well, I think the big thing is the issue about, as far as we're concerned, about the issue of the nuclear things going on in Pakistan. That's been a concern of a lot of people for some time, and it hasn't really been addressed. It's obvious from the cables that you can see that they're concerned that Pakistan has this nuclear material. They have recently, by the way, made a deal with the Chinese. The Chinese are making it even more easy for them to develop nuclear weapons and refine these things. So this is a serious problem.
And there's also another problem that keeps cropping up and has been confirmed by the WikiLeaks revelations, is that Pakistan definitely is responsible for creating the Taliban, for basically keeping them alive and going after 2001. We keep hearing that the administration knows that they're doing this, and it keeps rationalizing it based on this apparently strange idea that since the United States is going to leave the region, Pakistan somehow has the right to foment Islamist fundamentalists to basically destabilize Afghanistan in order to guarantee that India will not have any influence in Afghanistan. So this is an incredibly crazy scenario that has been supported, obviously now for the entire decade.
So Pakistan is now our supposed ally in this area, and I want to talk more about Pakistan and 9/11 in a few minutes, but Pakistan is our ally in this effort, and yet we've confirmed now that they're working hard to sort of keep the type of government that we overthrew in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
There's no question about it, and that has been going on, as we've talked about before with you. The whole issue about Pakistan goes back prior to 9/11. There are some serious issues regarding what was going on. I mean, the United States during the 1980s gave the Pakistani military carte blanche. General Zia-ul Haq was in charge of the country at that particular time, and he pretty much Islamized the country. He downplayed the secular government. He de-emphasized any kind of reform and democracy building there in order to help the United States defeat the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And that just opened the floodgates from Middle East money flowing in from Saudi Arabia, from the United Arab Emirates, all of that sort of thing. And it opened up, it also did something else too. It opened up the privatization of a lot of these the international drug smuggling, arms for drugs, that sort of thing, which had been kind of part of the covert efforts of a number of different institutions and governments during the 1960s and 70s, where they had, the CIA and the French intelligence and British intelligence had created these covert agencies, offshore agencies, in order to finance these operations against the Soviet Union. Well, what happened in the 1980s was that these things all got privatized. And that complicated the situation so that there's really no government oversight. And that's the core of what we're going to talk about with you later, is the fact that the governments really kind of gave over to private enterprise. And that private enterprise is now pretty much calling the shots. And the governments involved really don't have the kind of authority over it that is necessary.
Yeah, which I guess that's the very definition of a fascist country, when you have the private interests controlling the government.
I think that's a very good definition. At this point, we do seem to see this constant scenario, though, of this kind of legitimizing these ideas. And when you look at Pakistan and you look at the privatization process, the evolution of the drug trade that was rationalized in the 1980s in order to finance a lot of the mujahideen. Those same mujahideen, holy wars, turned into a lot of the warlords and terrorists today, up to and including the Taliban, who basically now have got pretty much, you know, satellite technology. They've got drug syndicates, world access to the world, basically.
Yeah, that they didn't have before. We're talking with Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their most recent book, it's a must read if you want to understand what is happening in this part of the world. It's called Invisible History: Afghanistan's Untold Story. I am so struck by the fact that we have sent men and women to die in Afghanistan to overthrow an Islamic fundamentalist government that threatened the United States. We partnered with Pakistan, and as we speak, our supposed partner and ally in this region is working 24/7 to recreate this Islamic fundamentalist government in Afghanistan. And by the money and supplies that we give Pakistan, we in a sense are helping to recreate the government that we overthrew.
I mean, we've been in communication with some people in our own, you know, in our own armed forces, and they've described it as Alice in Wonderland. That the policy that's coming out of Washington and that's coming out of the Beltway in Washington is basically putting our own people in jeopardy, and that this is, it's insane. I mean, there's no other word for it. We followed this story since 1981, when the United States really started to, you know, to gear up, supporting Islamism against, as opposed to supporting the moderates in both Pakistan and Afghanistan. And, you know, and we want to point out the fact that the Pakistani people are as much victims of these decisions, these policy decisions, as are the Afghan people. They've both suffered, and they both continue to suffer under these horrible political decisions that are made for, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. I think we went over this the last time we spoke. You know, there's a number of different agendas that are pulling on the administration and pulling on Washington at this point, much of which is, of course, related to oil pipelines and gas pipelines. The lobbies that they were behind putting the Taliban into power, creating the Taliban, putting them into power in the early 1990s, and it pretty much almost got recognition from the United States government, from the Clinton administration, until the women's issue really broke that down, until that really became public. But, you know, I mean, we banged on the doors of the major media trying to get stories out about that during the 1990s, and nobody just wanted to talk about it. And ironically, it was the entertainment media that wound up picking it up. Mavis Leno and Entertainment Tonight, that crowd, the Hollywood crowd, picked up on it, and people started to look at it. But, you know, it was just the serious media just never really considered it to be something that was worth putting on the evening news.
We're talking with Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. So, again, with the WikiLeaks, and talk about the corruption, what we're learning about the corruption in Afghanistan by the Karzai government and the people we support. It's really just gotten out of hand. What was this about this guy in America was walking around with $52 million in cash or something like this?
I believe the issue was that he was just basically pretty much taking the money out of Afghanistan and putting it wherever he chose to do. I mean, and that's the kind, there's been no oversight of any of this stuff that's been going on. From what I understand, that $1 billion a year leaves Afghanistan that's been put in by the United States and by European governments to help them rebuild the country. And $1 billion of it just winds up in packed up in suitcases and leaves for places like Dubai and other cities in the United Arab Emirates and other areas in the Middle East. This is what's been going on, and it's only now the Obama administration has taken steps to try to put some kind of clamps on this thing, to try to put some kind of oversight in charge. But it's so out of control, and as I said before, it's been privatized. You've got people, you know, bankers and international financiers going in and out of there. I mean, if we think the problems that we had with, you know, credit default swaps and some of the things, the corruption that we had in our own institutions on Wall Street here is bad. I mean, it's just, there's just no oversight whatsoever. It's just wheeling and dealing. They used to call it the wild East as opposed to the Wild West. Back in the 1980s. Well, now it's completely it's like the gold rush.
And the degree to which the people in Afghanistan or Pakistan, as you point out, the degree to which they actually have a say and there's any type of democratic input is laughable. It's a show.
Oh,
exactly.
It is.
Well, when you look at the way that Karzai was actually installed effectively against the will of the Afghan people, Zardari is certainly not a whole a lot different in terms of the levels of corruption that preceded him before he even got into office. And the fact is that when you look at these weakened, corrupted civilian leaders, you realize why the military, and certainly in Pakistan, constantly holds sway over the country. But it's almost as if it's a fait accompli, you know, by installing and by promoting these very weak people. You sort of guarantee that there's really going to be no kind of genuine civilian oversight over the military.
And, you know, the United States is definitely responsible for this. I mean, these Pakistani generals didn't, you know, they didn't come in from some other country or some other planet. You know, they've all cycled through the American military establishment. They've all, you know, I believe General Kayani, as well as Musharraf, as well as Zia-ul-Haq, they all attended the staff college in the United States, the U.S. Military Staff College, I think at Fort Leavenworth. They've all gone through an American system. So they were all well-known, and that's how they got into the system in the first place, in the late 1940s, 1947, 1948. The British personally introduced their military people who were running the empire for them to the Americans and said, these are our people, these are the people you're going to be working with. And they had British accents. The Afghans were over the mountains. The Pakistanis were there. The Punjabi-dominated military was there. And they had a relationship with the British, and that's pretty much the way it began, and it's continued on that without ever questioning the fundamentals.
It seems to be the basis, possibly, of why the United States has such a strange way of dealing with the malfeasance of the Pakistanis in these situations. They seem to tolerate things they would never tolerate with any other country. I mean, let's just think about what they're talking about doing to Iran, because they might develop a bomb. Here you have a country that is literally leaking with bombs, and the Americans don't seem to have any kind of genuine way to deal with it.
We're talking with Liz Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their book is Invisible History: Afghanistan's Untold Story. In a few weeks, we'll look forward to the new release of Crossing Zero: The AFPAC War and the Turning Point of American Empire. Is it just as simple? I want to try to boil this down here and see if I'm right. Is it just as simple as American empire, corporate state? You know, corporate America uses the power of our own government or of our own military and the militaries of other corrupt governments to basically access resources around the world and to get in and get these resources and profit from them. Is it just that same old story that we've seen time and time again throughout human history? Is this just the latest version, or is there something else going on that I'm missing?
Well, you know, there is a certain degree of repetition in this process. Who is it? Oswald Spengler, in the book that he wrote right after World War I, sat down and looked at this in Germany about the nature of governments and the way civilizations were governed. And he looked at the world and he said, you know, he said that, you know, for periods of time, countries are controlled by the religious elements of it within it. Let's say the United States. Okay, you start out, you know, an architectural survey is an example. Look at the architecture of your cities. The tallest buildings in the cities in the 18th centuries were what? Churches. That was the dominant class, okay? They were the people that held sway over the political decisions. All of the major universities were begun as religious institutions. Harvard University, I believe, was Calvinist. I know Boston University, when I went there, was Methodist. Began as a Methodist university. You have, of course, Catholic universities all over the country. So we don't tend to think of our major universities as being religiously oriented, but their foundations were in that religion in the 18th century and the early 20th century. So we developed into this secular thing. And then, so in the 19th century, early 20th century, up until probably World War II, we were very much an independent democracy. We functioned far more like a democracy. We didn't have to protect our leaders the way leaders were protected in other countries. I remember hearing stories from people we know about taking the trolley with Harry Truman down in Washington. They lived in Washington back in the 1930s and 40s, and right up until the time that he became president. They used to go to work every morning. He used to have a discussion with Harry Truman on the trolley on his way to work. So that's how the calm relations were in the United States up until 1944, 1945. But something happened in the United States during World War II where you had this union of the military, they call it the construction of the military-industrial complex, where industry was harnessed. Of course, coming out of the end of the Depression, you had a financial need. It was driven by the need to get the economy up and rolling, and the American economy doubled from the years 1940 to the year 1941 with just a production of vehicles, tanks, planes that were being shipped off in lend-lease to America's allies, mostly Britain, during that time period. So that changed the dynamic of what we are. And then, of course, 1947, you have the creation of the national security state. And so we have had this kind of separate government that has been underneath, that gets what it needs when it wants it. And Congress and the Senate and the president have to deal with that as a real issue.
But that's actually what that would really be, Spengler's idea of the third state, which is the
right.
Corporate state, and that is actually one of the three. The triad is, you know, what he referred to as military really represents corporations at this
right.
point, and that was the military state, the theocracy, and the secular state. So now we're in the military state.
Yeah.
Which is the corporate state.
We're talking with Liz Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. The book is Invisible History. And before we run out of time, I have to ask you your thoughts about the 9/11 Commission. Truly, I think we could say, buried real evidence and real facts that payment to the 9/11 hijackers was ordered, came from the United Arab Emirates, but appears to have been ordered right out of the ISI, the Pakistani CIA. They buried that, and they not only buried it, they said that it's really not important how they were paid, and we don't really want to look there. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Don't pursue that. What are your thoughts on this? How is it that we have real evidence that the payment of the 9/11 hijackers had something to do with Pakistani intelligence, and yet then we rush to make Pakistan our allies? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, I think you've hit on it. That relationship obviously goes to the core of a controlling interest in the United States and the American government that that has developed over the last years and is part of the Cold War and was sheltered by the Cold War. And I think that was nobody questioned that kind of relationship. And so you've got certain individuals. I know Sybil Edmonds has done quite a bit on that. If you can Google her work on this and the controversy she ran into. She was a translator at the FBI who came across all of these cable transmissions from eavesdropping that was being done and between the Turks and the Pakistanis and some others in terms of what was being done with the monies that were being funneled from one place to another, and some very high-level people in the United States government. And she's named those names as to who they were, and that they really should be behind bars for their involvement. And so they're being protected. And that's why we don't get to the bottom of any of these things, because the people who are running the investigations are, of course, the people who are involved in it. It's obviously one of the reasons why the American government does not want to close Guantanamo. It does not want to put these people on trial in public courts, because a lot of this information would come pouring out, and we'd have back what we had back like during the 1970s in the Church Committee and during the Watergate era in the 1980s. And the Iran-Contra scandal, when you discover, and a lot of these people are the same people who were fomenting these kinds of conspiracies back in the 60s and 70s, and they're at it again. And except this time they've been given, because of 9/11, they've been given carte blanche. They can go out and do whatever hijinks they feel they can get their hands on, and now it's covered by this thing, this blanket thing called Homeland Security. You know, and again and again, you discover that the people that are involved in this recent attack is an example, or effort to attack the Christmas tree lighting up in Portland, Oregon. This was something. This was a guy who had basically been set up by the FBI. He'd been trained by the FBI, and he'd been lured in to do this sort of thing. Well, that's been happening more and more. In this particular case, when he dialed the number to blow the bomb up, it was the number to the FBI, and they came and arrested him. But the fact is that if you look at all of these incidences, a lot of these people who've been brought in, and particularly the people who we were talking about earlier, the person who wired the money that Mahmoud Ahmad, the ISI chief, told him to, Saeed Sheikh, He was the person you were mentioning.
Yeah,
he was the person. Saeed Sheikh was the person who wired the money to Muhammad Atta. He was said by, I believe it was in Musharraf's autobiography, where he claimed that he had been recruited by British intelligence, by MI6. So, you know, you've got these various intelligence agencies who are working with private contractors. You've got the British intelligence, French intelligence, American intelligence. It's privatized. The FBI doesn't share information with the CIA. You have all these other separate organizations. Now you've got places like what used to be called Blackwater, Z. You've got DynCorp. You've got all these operations that are very powerful. They deal in information. They've got capabilities. They've got people. They've got bank accounts and foreign capitals. I mean, it's out of control.
Liz Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. The book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. We'll look forward to talking to you both again very soon. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having us on, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.